Good morning and welcome to the Roundtable on this third day of April. It is a Tuesday, 9:13 this morning, and hopefully that's helpful for you if you're on your way to work or if you're already late. You know how late you are. But good morning. Welcome. We have a great panel assembled here. We have a lot to talk about, and we'll get to that in just a second. Let me make my way around the room and introducing folks. Alan Chartok is here. Good morning, sir. How are you?
Yo, great. Great good. To be here.
Good, good to have you here. We have our good friend Mike Spain here. He is the associate editor of the Times Union, joins us every Tuesday and whenever we can get him. Good morning.
Good morning.
Very nice to have you here, sir.
Thanks very much.
J.P. Miller is the man behind Empire Report. He is with us this morning. Good morning, J.P.
Morning, Joe.
And Libby Post, back again, and she is a political consultant. She joins us every Tuesday. She joins us, and we're thrilled to have you back.
Well, thank you, dear.
Thank you very much. All right. We welcome your letters, panel@wamc.org. panel@wamc.org. We have, as I said, we have a lot of topics to get to, and there's a few places we could start. But let us begin with the stock market. We'll talk about China trade and kind of put those two stories together. But markets that climbed the Trump bump are tumbling down from it is the headline in this morning's New York Times. In the Trump bump is becoming the Trump slump. In the first year of Donald Trump's presidency, ebullient investors propelled stock markets to one record high after another. And Mr. Trump was the bull in chief, celebrating the record-breaking March as validation of his economic policies. Well, those days are done. Even after a false start to 2018, stock markets finished the first quarter down for the year, the first quarterly decline since 2015, has suggested that a period of calm and steadily rising markets had given way to turbulent new era with a bearish bent. Of course, all the talk about tariffs is not helping things, at least in the last several days and weeks. The other story, looming China trade actions divide industry and roils the markets. The president's promise to take tough action against China's unfair economic practices was one of his most popular campaign ideas. But as the United States prepares stiff trade measures and China retaliates, thank you, stock markets have plummeted and some of America's biggest companies are pushing back. Industry giants like General Electric and Goldman Sachs, as well as agricultural companies, have lodged objections with the White House, saying that the tariffs on both sides of the Pacific and limitations on investments will cut off American companies from the world's most lucrative and rapidly growing market. Two articles from the New York Times. Alan.
Well, I think it says it all. The news report says it all. This guy is so concerned about his own ability to cause chaos that he doesn't really think about what the implications are going to be for so many people in this country. A lot of people have money invested in the stock market, and that doesn't only mean the big guys. It means a lot of little people who also do that. But the big guys, the Fords and the other people, they are all concerned about what this is going to mean for them. And when it comes down to it, I think that that nobody is going to be happy this morning.
Well, it's ordinary for the stock market to have trends that go up and trends that go down. And that would be happening. It just can't go up forever. It happens to be going down now a little bit, and it is troubling, and it's worrisome for people who have their retirement savings or their investments all in the stock market, which is fully half of Americans. So it is troubling. But the other issue that you mentioned, Alan, was the China tariffs and the impact of that, and that is having that could really hurt a lot of the same people who came out and voted for Trump, Midwestern farmers, pork producers, major manufacturers who benefited from the recent tax cut, and now they are forced to pay, because they're going to have to take a hit. They're not going to have the traffic and the trade that they had with China, and other countries and other companies around the globe are going to benefit from this. China can take They have the long view. Xi is now the president for life in China, and he can take the long view, and he doesn't have a political campaign coming up in 6 months and has to worry about that, and he's not one who's prone to knee-jerk reactions. So we're in a tough spot there.
JP?
In the Daily Mail, they say the Dow Jones now has the second quarter start is the worst since the Great Depression. Stock market plunges more than 600 points. As Mike said, it's been going up now for 9 years. And it is what a lot of people say is it is a combination of not just the China trade war stuff, but also the Fed raising interest rates, and then also the volatile tech sector with Facebook plunging over the last week with recent news with what they're going through, and then also Trump's recent attack on Amazon. Facebook and Amazon are now two of the top 10 countries in the stock market index, and those are both plunging and also bringing down a lot of other tech giants with them.
And not to be overly simplistic here, but isn't it the general rule that what goes up must come down? Besides these specific policies and these specific actions that are causing turbulence in the stock market, that most people expected that when you up, yeah, eventually that's going to come down, right?
It was a bubble, and it has had to have burst at some point. You know, when you talk about the tech stocks, Facebook did this to themselves. There's no two ways about it.
Right. It's
Amazon,
different.
However,
yeah.
This is a direct attack on freedom of the press because Trump goes after Amazon, yep, because Jeff Bezos, sure, owns the Washington Post. He doesn't like what the Post says about him. So he goes after Amazon, says scurrilous lies around Amazon's relationship with the Post Office. The Post Office is like saying,
what did we do?
What did where did we come in on this? We love this relationship. It's giving us business, you know. And so the president is, you know, has this scattershot, as we all know, a scattershot approach to governing. And so Facebook, yes,
Libby, it's
Amazon
just an
didn't have to have happen.
That's
well,
good.
Yeah, I get
but
that.
Also, but also, Libby and Mike, isn't it also true that this president took great credit for the rise of the stock market? Had
yes, he
not
did.
Done that?
Right.
It would be all right for now. It's like Cuomo when he said, "I'm in charge of the subways." Well, when the subways collapsed, then Cuomo had it.
Right.
And in this case, no question.
Well, it'll be interesting to see if he actually responds and tones it down with the Fortune 500 companies coming to him and saying, "Enough already. You're impacting the bottom line. You're impacting our bottom line, which will ultimately impact your bottom line."
And
so
what do you think he'll do?
He'll say, "I'm not responsible," because that's what he says.
Anybody?
Trump will be very focused on trying to get the stock market back before his reelection. He has, without
2.5 years,
right? Without a strong economy and a strong stock market, his chances for reelection are very low. You can look at that throughout history. And while the stock market, what goes up will come down. If you look at the stock market throughout history, in general, it has moved up over a tremendous amount over a long period of time. Like if you had ridden the stock market through the 2008 crash, you would have and stayed invested, you would have made your money back within 2 years. So there is volatility. I think there will be more volatility. And Trump is certainly going to try and get the stock market to go up because without a strong stock market and a strong economy, his chances of reelection are very slim.
Well, if he doesn't get it up before the November elections, the Republicans, it will just hurt the Republicans and give Democrats a better chance to run in and say, "Well, under Obama, things were a lot better," and play that card.
But there's polling out that shows a majority of Americans don't want him to be president again. That they won't vote for him and that they don't want him to be president again.
But as you know, Libby,
I know
that's
it's early.
That's not the way he won.
Yeah, I
he didn't
I get
win
that.
With a majority. He won with
an electoral college
yeah. And in specific key states.
Right.
Now we'll get a lot of letters today saying, as we mentioned this, why not just reform the electoral college? Yeah. Well, good to go.
Good luck with that.
That may happen over time, but not in time for 2020.
Certainly not.
So, what about the other people involved here, meaning the House, the Senate? Why are they not speaking out as to what the president is doing as far as with NAFTA, with China? Why is there not more intervention on their
Joe, that's a brilliant question. Because here's the deal. These Republicans, of course, are spineless when it comes to taking on Trump. They know that he's popular in their constituency and that he'll, even if he doesn't put somebody up, somebody more pro-Trumpian will, in fact, run. But the problem is that in each constituency, there's also major businesses. And those people are going to be in their congressman or in the senator's office saying, you got to stop this guy. He's ruining everything for all of us. But they're going to be considered talking about what's happening to the export of chickens or soybeans or whatever else is going on in their particular district. And when you add up that amalgam of people, it means trouble because they're going to be angry and they're going to have to produce for the people who are giving them the money.
It just seems that if there were one or a few people, because a few Republicans have questioned the tariffs and worry about a trade war. But at one point, the momentum may swing and Republicans may be able to feel safer criticizing the president than they do now. They're right. I think they're terrified about reelection. They don't know whether it's better to stay silent, criticize him, speak in favor of him. So they're just sort of walking this wobbly line, and they're holding their fingers up to the wind, trying to just get through this year. And
Okay. So then tell me, Mike, because you really are very smart, and you write those editorials.
Wait for it.
Times, and all that. No, but tell me what you would do if you were in one of their places.
Well, asking me what I would do, I think they should have backbone. I think that many Republicans, moderate Republicans, by now should have stepped forward and distanced themselves from the president's harsh policies. But, you know, I think they would look good today.
Okay, so tell me what Lindsey Graham is up to.
I can't understand what Lindsey Graham is up to. One day he seems like he's bold and courageous and speaks out extraordinarily independent of the president. The next minute he's playing golf in Mar-a-Lago and he's saying he's the greatest guy in the world and we're good buddies. He's trying to have his cake and eat it too, Alan.
Do you think he's interested in being president?
Well, he did run. Usually when they run and they don't succeed, they try again, don't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it's interesting because you're right. There are days you watch them on CNN and you say, whoa, this is good. And then, you know, you turn around and he's playing the same old game.
Well, I mean, that's what they're all doing. I think he just exemplifies it because it's more extreme.
No, but he can be more out front about the president.
Yeah. I mean, he's worried about or at least taking into, account what his political future will be and how it will look down the road if he was critical of Trump or if he was too cozy with Trump. It's a hard decision they all have to face.
You were talking, Mike, about walking this wobbly line. But for somebody like Paul Ryan, he's been walking that wobbly line since the election when, you know, he's not going to endorse him. He's going to endorse Trump. He won't endorse Trump. He will endorse Trump. He won't mention his name. He will, but he'll sort of mention his name. I mean, but we haven't progressed at all in the 2 years.
And the result of that is stagnation. And that's sort of what has gripped our Congress now.
But to go one step further, walking the wobbly line doesn't seem to be working for anybody, but especially even in his election. I mean, there are still the rumors that he may not even run again. But
But
assuming he is going to run again, he has a solid competitor, you would think you step it up a little bit, right?
Well, if what does stepping up mean? Being stronger?
Yes.
Being stronger in support of the president and endorsing the president and
the
embracing the president?
Well, one or the other.
One or the other.
Like, it's some backbone.
They've been able to escape having to vote on immigration. They've been able to escape some other big issues because they haven't come up. The Senate hasn't sent them over. And they would rather not commit to anything. It's easier when you don't have to commit to something in a mixed district.
I think 2018 is the correct number for anybody to be looking at. They are marching in place, as you say, Mike. They are, but they don't know which way to go. If, in fact, the Congress becomes overwhelmingly Democratic, and there are some estimates now that it could go by as many as 50 seats for the Democrats, 50 extra seats.
In the House.
In the House, right. Nobody seems to think they'll take the Senate. But they could. I mean, I'm looking at the television set in my mind's eye and saying, oh boy, look at who lost.
Mm-hmm.
But let's assume that some of these predictions, which are probably inflated for the Congress or so, what will you do if you're a Republican congressman at that stage of the game? And what will you do if you're Speaker Ryan, who is not going to be Speaker anymore, obviously, under all of that? What will you do? Will you start to say, I have to resurrect my own political career, the hell with Trump?
Yeah, well, I mean, if the Democrats win that many seats or even a fraction of that many seats and take firm control of the House of Representatives, you can bank on it. There will be voted articles of impeachment against Trump, and they'll deliver that to the Senate. And a divided Senate may be prone to convicting a president.
Yeah, I think that there are enough middle-of-the-road Republicans who somebody like—
They'll come out of the woodwork
safe. Right, when it's safe. Yeah, yeah. Somebody like a Lindsey Graham. We come out
We're
of
not.
Woodwork when it's safe. I think there are some, and it's all conjecture at this point, except for the fact that the Republicans do risk very clearly losing the House in 2018.
Hey, because the Democrats could blow this, though.
Oh,
absolutely.
Yes, they could. Oh. I mean, I have no doubts about that.
Absolutely.
You know, except that they can blow it. Yes, they can. But if we do take the House, if the Democrats do take the House...
Oh, you're a Democrat? You said we?
Yes,
I didn't
Democrat. You didn't know I was a Democrat?
No.
You hide it.
Go ahead. Well, yeah. I guess.
35 seconds.
Yeah,
go
okay,
ahead.
Fine. You know, I just think that it will change everyone's tenor. It will change the Republican Party's tenor. And you will see Trump be more and more isolated, which will mean he will act out and thrash out and ruin things even more.
All right. We'll give you the last word for this break, but we'll come back and give everybody else their word. We welcome you to do your thing, too. Panel at WAMC.org. Panel at WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Good morning. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our panel discussion for this Tuesday morning. J.P. Miller, Alan Chartok, Mike Spain, Libby Post. I'm Joe Donahue. 35 minutes past 9 o'clock. We have a fistful of letters. Alan will go through them, and then we'll move on to other topics.
Okay. Charles, or Chuck, as we say, in Bearsville, writes the following letter. Every time Trump casually mentions something about trade wars, the market jumps, and somebody is making money off of this.
Day traders, yeah.
And I'm sure it's someone Trump knows, and that's Chuck in Bearsville, where everybody walks in the woods. Okay, and then let's see here. John says of Amazon, I'm waiting for Jeff Bezos to buy Twitter and delete Trump's account. Clever. Okay, here we go. And then Daisy, our friend Daisy, says, just got back from China. Being in Beijing for 10 days, you are so aware of how every day they are growing by leaps and bounds. There are so many people there, and they adore Xi because of what he has done for the poor. So good luck, Mr. Trump, with the trade war. We cannot win, and that's from Daisy. Okay. And Sherry says, stock market. I got my retirement statement yesterday. It was down 10% for the first quarter, but that didn't take into account yesterday.
Right. No, that's right.
Yeah. Don't look. It's
yesterday
painful.
It's just be careful when you look.
Well, I only look when it's going up. I don't look when it's going down.
No.
And then Keith says, good morning, panel. The rise in Dow Jones Industrial Average from the presidential inauguration the first day of April the following year. Obama was up 37%, Trump 19%. We live in a fact-free world, says Keith. Actually, I think, am I correct in this? You'll all correct me.
I think
Trump is still ahead in terms of the rise of the stock market from the time
he is.
He took
over. It's still up. It went up 20% or something that since he became president.
Yeah,
it's still
it's
not below where
down.
When he took over. That's important
right.
to note. Yeah.
And Chef Rick, our friend, said, why Republicans are silent? Good morning, panel. My theory on why the Republicans are silent so much on Trump's madness is that they have promised their benefactors that they would pass particular bills and dismantle particular bills. As long as Trump is there, they have the majority, and they'll do just that. If Trump goes down, they will all run for the hills, and that's Rick from Woodstock. He has a group called Dawn.
Dawn.
Rick Orlando.
Tony Orlando.
It's R-I-C-K from Woodstock.
Rick Orlando and Dawn. Yeah. Okay. John of Amazon says, I'm a Trump supporter, but I love listening to what other side's opinions are to round out my views. About Amazon, I believe that while not all Trump reasons for attacking the company are noble, but isn't it also true that Amazon is the online equivalent of Walmart? They've edged out most competitors. More and more brick and mortar stores are shutting down, leading to loss of jobs. And more importantly, they have little meaningful competition. I think bringing them down a peg or two could have a positive step for a free market. There's a little bit of schadenfreude, as we say, here. On the other hand, and what John says is absolutely right. I mean, I can't even tell you the stores that I've gone into that saying they're having a real rough time of it because people are buying from Amazon and online. But as Andrew Cuomo once said, it is what it is. So,
but he's trying to tax, you know, the state officials are trying to pass laws that would tax all the online. Amazon right. does pay taxes, but a lot of third parties that use Amazon do not pay state sales taxes, giving them an advantage over brick and mortar stores in your own neighborhood.
But Mike, you don't think that the reason Trump is doing this is because of protecting small businesses, do you?
No, it's probably as Libby said, you know, he doesn't like Jeff Bezos, the owner of the Washington Post, which has been doing some just fine journalism, you know, uncovering all kinds of wrongdoing within the Trump administration. And it's it also has been raised by others, and Trump would embrace this probably just because it would be advantageous, that, you know, it does seem to be skirting a lot of antitrust laws. And in different administrations, a company like Amazon might face some government restriction that it has not faced in recent years. So, who
right.
knows?
But they're very, very selective in all of that. I mean, he went after the Qualcomm thing because it would hurt China and China's
technology,
allies.
And protect U.S.
Right,
technology.
Right, yeah. But antitrust, you know, cases are few and far between when Republicans are in charge.
True.
I would agree
Except
with
when
that.
Teddy Roosevelt was president, because he's the one who put it all for it.
And Chris says about Lindsey Graham. Hi, guys. If you're wondering what the deal is with Lindsey Graham, remember that when the DNC emails were hacked, so were the RNC emails. Graham is acting exactly as if Trump and his cronies have something on him. I'll let you discuss what that is. Well, I don't know what it is.
I think we've talked a lot about
what that would be.
What we think that may be.
Yes.
Hi, panel, says Doug. All Trump needs is the Electoral College. Even if 60% won't vote for him, does the so-called interstate compact to maximize the blue state's electoral votes have a possibility of happening? And that's from Doug. In other words, you all know what that is, right? The blue state compact is everybody says, okay, whoever gets, you know, we'll get all of our electoral votes.
Right. Winner take all, right?
Yeah. Well, I haven't seen any great move towards that, but
I'll have to look at my Empire limited support. But yeah. New York is one of the ones in the Interstate Compact to reform the electoral system. I did see that one of the writers in did say the Electoral College will be abandoned when a Democrat wins the presidency and loses the popular vote, and then it will change immediately. But not until then.
That's pretty funny.
Yeah. So, great. Who's in charge of Congress?
Was that a letter you wanted? Was that our final letter?
I think I read it already.
Okay.
Yeah, no, I did read it already. Remember Chuck in Bearsville?
Oh, that's right. Yeah.
Bears walked,
that's in the woods.
In the woods. Yeah, right.
There we go. Okay. You're talking about New York State, so let's take a couple of New York State stories before we go to break. Number one, Democratic Representative Elizabeth Esty has announced she will not seek re-election amid criticism.
Well, now, let's remember, Joe, that Elizabeth Esty is in Connecticut, not New York.
Right. My apologies.
But
yeah.
It's in the
my
tri-state
apologies.
Area.
Yes, yeah. I was
but
thinking
in your
local
listening
news.
Area.
Yes, yes, that's what I mean.
I love.
Thank you.
Thank you
very much.
I love Elizabeth Esty, and I'm very disappointed in this.
So, retiring after a scandal over an abusive staff member.
Right.
And she has said that she will not run into re-election, forced into retirement, and certainly a casualty in this year's reckoning with sexual assault, harassment, and abuse. Her case involved a cover-up of some pretty terrible behavior by her chief of staff, Tony Baker, who made a death threat on the voicemail of a former staffer, Anna Kane, whom he once dated. And then you would have hoped or that she would have stepped in to take care of the situation. She did not and is now facing the consequences.
Well, wait. She did fire the guy. Took 3 months to do it, but she fired him.
But couldn't part of this be just that people in Congress, whether they're on the Democratic side or the Republican side, are just pretty frustrated with it? It must be a pretty terribly unhappy situation no matter what.
What do you mean, Mike?
So you're a member of Congress, a typical member of Congress, not part of the leadership. Whether you're a Democrat or Republican, it's just a grim situation. You can't get much done. You just wait for the leadership to tell you what to do. And then something comes along, like a legitimate problem like she was experiencing with her staff. The combination probably makes it, they lose their heart. I mean, what's the point of seeking re-election if you can't get much done? I think it's
the Me Too, and that she didn't take action. And when women don't take action when other women come forward, it's more damning from a PR point of view.
I mean, he left, but she also said she would give him a recommendation.
And yeah. I think $5,000.
Yeah.
She over the last couple of days, she held on with everything she had. It's a nice gig to be the member of Congress from the 5th District of Connecticut, and she had every Democratic elected official in Connecticut call for her resignation, short of Governor Malloy. So she did hold on as long as she could, and the 5th District of Connecticut is a district that was held by Republicans for over 20 years. It is a competitive district, and there is also an open governor's race in Connecticut where I think there are 10 or 12 Democrats running and 10 or 12 Republicans and even a couple qualified independents. So Connecticut will be a very interesting battleground in 2018 with the overlay of the Trump wave. Well, or anti-Trump wave.
I have to say, that's right.
She took over Chris Murphy's seat, right?
That's right.
When Chris Murphy left and went to the Senate, she took over his seat.
That's right.
Yes.
So that's the district that's close to New York.
Yes, yeah. The Cheshire.
I feel very badly about this one. I really liked her. I've interviewed her so many times on the Congressional Corner on this program. I just feel badly. I don't know that I thought she played... She played the carom correctly. In other words, she just started to apologize from the minute it happened. And people make mistakes, all right. But I don't know. She just threw herself on the funeral pyre, and I didn't like that.
I don't think she threw herself on the funeral pyre soon enough. To be honest with you, she didn't. She didn't take responsibility. I mean, I remember reading last week, I'm not going anywhere.
Well,
and it took everybody saying, come on, this is untenable now for you.
Well, remember, it's a very competitive district.
Yeah, well, I get that. It's a very competitive district.
And I think there
district.
May even be more Republicans than Democrats. And I'm quite sure that Trump took the district.
That I can't tell you.
I'm checking now.
Okay, I think he did.
But, that's the Newtown district.
That's right.
Newtown, Litchfield Newtown, County, Danbury, Brookfield, Waterbury.
Right. Cheshire.
They're my next
Cheshire,
door neighbors.
Meriden, Farmington Valley.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's lovely. It's really lovely there. But she should have acted as a woman in a position of power. She should have acted more quickly.
I'll let it rest there.
That's all I have to say.
All right. Let's take a break. We'll let it all rest there for a moment. When we come back, we'll move on to other stories. We welcome your letters. Panel@WAMC.org. Panel@WAMC.org. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the roundtable and to our discussion this morning. Very nice to have you with us, as always. We do have letters and more letters, and Alan is going to read those now.
I will, boss. Amazon war. Hi, Trump is just jealous that Bezos is real, capital letters, successful businessman, and probably much wealthier than president. I'm not going to release my taxes, Trump. Oh, I see. not and probably much wealthier than president, I'm not going to release my taxes, Trump. I wanted to get that one right.
And the fact that he called for Amazon and Bezos to release their taxes is so duplicitous. I mean, really.
Ilias says, I have many Republican friends who like Trump. They are part of the base. No senator would dare to anger these voters by voting for impeachment, period, and two explanation points. Dick, I'll tell you something about these guys. They'll do what they have to do to survive. And if the current shifts, they're going to be right there doing what they have to do.
So there won't be profiles in Courage. It'll just be taking a temperature of the political atmosphere and then doing whatever is the most expedient.
Hey, Mikey, as long as you mention that, is there any profile in Courage among the Republicans in the Senate now? Perhaps John McCain, but is there anybody
Jeff
else?
Flake, maybe? Or he's on his way
out,
though.
Yeah, but he's on his way out.
Yeah.
Who? They all seem to be Jeff on their Flake. Way out. Or...
Well, and also, you know, he's making his bed for a potential presidential
He's going to run for president. I don't think there's any question about it.
Sure. So is there anybody who just says, this ain't right, as my son Jonas always says, this ain't right.
Any Republicans in the Senate you're talking
Well, you
about.
Wouldn't say Lindsey Graham does that to a great
Regularly
extent?
Regularly he does, and then he backs other off. Stuff.
Right, so he calls out President Trump when he disagrees with him, and then he admits when he agrees with him. That's no good? You have to be, as a Republican, uniformly against everything about Trump?
You know, JP, I'm glad you're here. I'm glad you're here. I mean, that's the other way of looking at it. That, you know, if you're good...
But if you want to be a leader, you have to stick to
Would that guy vote to impeach Trump?
Lindsey Graham?
Yes.
I would guess no. Yeah. But I think
that... So according if there were no
So
votes.
Therefore, I'm right, you're wrong.
But I do think
ding,
that
ding,
if
ding.
There were... I do think Knock that if out. There were all of a sudden 53 Democratic senators next year, could they find 7 Republicans to vote for impeachment? I bet they could.
Yeah, and I think he might be one of them.
Yeah, because at that stage of the game, they put their finger up in the
air, right.
And they feel the wind blowing the right way, and they do it. Right. That's not a profile in courage.
No.
I don't think.
You see very few of those in politics, right? People that are going to do what's right against their self-interest, I've never seen it. I don't think.
It happens, but they end up losing and not being reelected often. But over time, there have been, you know, people who've stood up and it's cost them.
You know, there was a classic case, I've referred to it a couple of times, in the New York State Assembly by a guy named Michaels, who represented an upstate, he was a Jewish guy, he represented an upstate area, and he was going to vote with everybody to... not allow abortion, and his was the crucial vote. And the day before, apparently, his son called him a prostitute. And he got up on the floor, and he cried. And he switched his vote for allowing women to have abortions in New York State.
It was 1970.
It was the controlling vote. It was the controlling vote. And, of course, they didn't even renominate him in his district.
Well, look at Roy McDonald. He was the state senator from the Capital Region who was a crucial vote in passage of same-sex marriage a few years ago, and I think in 2010 or 2009. When he came up for reelection, Kathy Marchione, an assembly member, took him on in a Republican primary and beat him. And he was knocked out of office because of it. But he was a profile in courage. He stood for he believed in.
All three of them lost. And they were the Republicans across the country, actually, who stood up for marriage equality and ended up losing their seats because it was clear leading up to that. Now, Roy, I worked on his campaign. He was a pro-choice, pro-gay rights Republican. And I understand that there were other issues there, but that certainly was a salient one.
That was made the issue during the primary that knocked him out.
Right.
And to answer the question you brought up, JP, I mean, there's a guy that acted in a way that was not in his own self-interest because he did the right thing.
And Steve Saland, who was an excellent legislator
from the Mid-Hudson Valley,
was primaried by the right. And then Terry Gibson became the state senator because the guy who won the primary couldn't get elected in the general. And Mark Rosanti out in Buffalo, same thing.
I did. I've been researching for the last couple of moments the question we had earlier about the 5th congressional district in Connecticut. I finally finding the election results.
I think it went for Hillary. That's my bet.
It did. It did.
Oh, boy.
It
went.
I think it went wrong.
Well, no, it went, but it was very close. It was 49-9 to 45-8 for Trump.
Hmm.
But that district
for Hillary.
Hillary and 45% for Trump. But Elizabeth Esty won with like 58% in that district, and that district also went for President Obama the first time. 56% and then 54% in 2012.
I do want to apologize for getting that wrong. I'm quite sure I remember her saying during the congressional corner something like, Al and I have a lot of Trump voters.
Well, she does, and she does. If you look at the district of not so much in again, it's hard to do with the presidential. But if you look at the district, the way it is carved out, it is a very Republican. It's a red district, except for when you look at it in the
kind of purple.
Yes.
Right.
Well, I don't know that Libby agrees with me, but I feel very badly for her. I wish she had made a better choice.
She had made better choices, too. I hate to see women be brought down by a man's ridiculous actions and stupid actions, but she didn't act soon enough.
Okay, so Dick says, Electoral College will be abandoned when a Democrat wins the presidency and loses the popular vote. It will change immediately and not until. That's interesting because we've had a lot of examples now, well, substantial examples of the Democrat losing because of the Electoral College. So what would it look like if the Republican lost because of the Electoral College?
It would be a rigged election, I believe. That's what it was called.
Yeah.
I think it's kind of like in the World Series, though. If the Yankees win 4-1 and the Mets win 3, 25-0, even though the Mets have scored 200 more runs, the Yankees win the World Series. That's simply the rules of the game. And I find it hard to imagine that they'll ever change the Electoral College because it empowers these swing states that usually don't get a lot of attention. If they did it simply by population, all the money would be spent in New York, California, and Miami.
It goes all the way back to the Constitutional Convention. That's where they duked it out. How they came up with it. Okay. And then let's see here. Murphy says, it is funny that the left keeps mentioning polls as sure things. If you took away anything from the last election, it should be that polls are flawed. Saying it over and over doesn't make it true. Well, Murphy, you know what? I think we made that very clear. We said in this council right here that it's very possible for the Democrats to blow it. Didn't we?
Yeah.
Right.
I don't think so.
And remember that the polls that are taken are within a margin of error. And if you look at the preponderance of polls that were taken in 2016, Trump won within the margin of error. You know, it wasn't a blowaway. There was the sort of these extrapolated guesses that it was a much higher percentage based on a whole lot of other.
Yeah, like people who didn't want to come out of the.
Yeah, but when you looked at the actual polls, they were all pretty much on track within a few percentage points.
That's right. And you may remember that I.
Yes, I do, Alan, that you were one of the ones predicting that it could possibly go the other way.
Yes, of course.
As it did.
Yes.
Yeah. Okay, and
thank you for reminding us.
As usual, thank you very much.
I appreciate that.
Christian says, good morning, panel. The speed of transactions is much faster today, but how is Amazon disruption of local brick-and-mortar business with a complicit U.S. Postal Service any different from the Sears Roebuck catalog of the late 1800s? And that's thanks. Anybody want to answer that before I do?
I think Amazon last Christmas took up more than 10% of retail sales for the entire United States. And if you look at the tax base of a lot of our cities and suburbs, they're built on a lot of retail businesses. And
But 100 years ago, Sears Roebuck was selling all across the country selling houses, selling everything by mail order. I mean, it's often been compared to Amazon, you know, the Amazon of, and now it's in decline.
Right,
you know,
but that was before there was the capital to do the bricks and mortar.
Well, I have to say that, you know, I'm a big believer about this. I think Amazon has a right to do what it's doing, but where I'm concerned, I go to the local bookstore in Great Barrington, Book Loft, because it's a great store. And I want to encourage them, and I realize that if we're going to keep them and we're going to be able to do that, we really do have to support our local businesses. And I think there'll be more people coming around to that sooner or later. And John says, political vitriol, which is present in stock and trade, does have human as well as fiscal consequences. Trump assumes any opposition to his presidency requires being hit back at harder. He can't even stop doing it when he's standing next to the Easter Bunny. Maybe once the stock market tanks a bit more due to his unbridled vindictive tweets, those who are still supporting this narcissistic approach to governing will wake up before it's too late. All the signs are there. This will not end well. John.
We'll end there.
That's what I got.
Next up, News with Ray. Welcome back to the roundtable. We have letters. We're going to get to those. If you would like to write a letter, and by God, we'd love you to, panel@wamc.org, panel@wamc.org. And Alan, go through those, and then I want to talk about the other story that we have about, Governor Cuomo.
Okay. Regular correspondent Naomi says, good morning, panel. That was a great question. Do you have to be against everything Trump says or does? It's occurred to me frequently, my answer, I say yes, because whatever Trump and even Pence says or does is a lie or traitorous, unfortunately.
It may be a lie, but there's certain things about Trump that I agree with. I certainly agree with his take during the primary on the Iraq war and chastising the Bush administration for dragging us into that war that was such a waste of trillions of dollars. I mean, you know, you say enough things, you're going to find something
and
that
now,
people agree with.
And now he wants to get us into a war.
I was going to say.
Well, there is that.
Be trillions and trillions of dollars.
But the other thing, Mike, is that nothing he says means anything because you know he's going to reverse himself, you know, on that.
He may reverse himself. You can never be sure of anything. He just throws things out to see how they land on the wall. And if it sticks, he might stick with it until it starts to fall off. And then he abandons it.
Yeah. You ever play handball?
Handball.
Yeah.
Were you a handball player, Alan?
I was. Because
what did we learn from that?
All Jewish guys who lived in New York
City.
I'm sorry,
not that kind of handball. I play with the regular.
I'm sorry, what?
The regular ball.
Oh, okay.
And there was a fence.
No, in the park. You play handball in the park.
No, there was a fence. I'm sorry, Rosemary isn't here. Behind the Clegg's and Fire Island. And that's where we play.
Oh, okay.
The reason that's important is it's how you play what comes off of the wall.
That's right.
That's what it is. Don't you see? No, you don't.
So Trump is...
God, that's what we're talking about.
He's...
Oh, come on. Get your definitely, mind out of the gutter.
Definitely
well, I didn't know.
Turns you as the ball comes off the wall.
I do know.
Okay,
all right. Here we go.
I used to play it.
Joni says, 67 votes needed to convict and remove. I think I heard JP ask if they could get enough GOP votes to make a total of 60 votes 60. To impeach and remove. But 60 is not enough. They need 67. If they had 53 Dems and Indies, they need 14 more senators to get to that 67 in order to convict and remove. In the event of impeachment, forgive if I misunderstood.
Are you two doing math over there? What are you doing?
Yeah, I mean, evidently you need a two-thirds majority to convict in the Senate if someone is brought up on articles of impeachment, and I believe that's correct, and I had forgotten that. So.
And remember that, and this is from Joni Nathol. Okay, so now let's see here. Christopher says, would you say something?
Nothing.
Is that Athol, New York or Athol, Massachusetts?
I said where everyone plays handball.
Yeah.
New York City, yes. Yeah.
Okay, and Christopher says, Electoral College, keep with one change. Keep the Electoral College, but add a requirement also to win the majority. And that's from Chris from Selkirk. Okay, Chris, consider it done.
All right. Let's go to other stories, and
Okay, there was a story in the Washington Post about Governor Cuomo trying to shield New Yorkers from the GOP tax plan in a possible model for Democratic-controlled states. So the blue states looking to New York to see how this works. Governor Cuomo, this is in the Washington Post. Governor Cuomo has pushed through a plan to shield his state residents from tax hikes under the Republican tax law, and Democratic-controlled state houses across the country are following suit. On Saturday, New York became the first state to approve new tax measures designed to shield residents from tax hikes under the GOP bill signed by President Trump. The two provisions, well, the basic question is, will it work?
Well, the question about whether your taxes could be quote-unquote charitable deductions to the local town, city, school district, county, the IRS will likely contest that. It will probably go to court. If it were to win, that would probably make a lot of other states do it also. The other one is more complicated. It would, and the budget bill that was passed over the weekend would let New York businesses, if they want to, do a payroll tax themselves and exempt their employees from having to pay income taxes. And that's very complicated. It likely would mean that employees would be paid less because when they don't have to pay income taxes, they'll get more money, so that would they would need to come up with that money some way if you're running a local business. They say it might work. If you have a small business of well-compensated people, you might be able to pool it all together and make it work, but it's unlikely at a large business, and it still hasn't been tested. But the best part about this story, and don't you agree, Alan, is here's the Washington Post with a national story saying Andrew Cuomo has done something progressive to counter the negative impact of the federal tax bill on localities and blue states especially, and other states are watching to see how it goes, and they may follow suit. That is so perfect.
Manna from heaven for you.
Boy, it sure is. Yeah.
I mean, if this works, if this really can work, this paves the way for him.
Well, I asked A.J. McMahon, who knows a lot about this stuff, and he says, no way it's going to work.
No, he's articulate on that. E.J. McMahon has been out in front on providing details about how this payroll tax thing could never work.
You mentioned such things as not-for-profits, which don't you can't play the same thing because it's of taxes.
Large employers couldn't do it.
Yeah, so and then I also asked, let's see, what congressman did I ask? Oh, I asked John Faso about this one. And John Faso wrote a letter to Cuomo just inquiring about it. Cuomo blew his stack at John Faso, and Faso doesn't think it'll work either, I don't believe.
That was a particularly vitriolic letter that he wrote to the governor, where he ended it saying that your father was always a gentleman. You, sir, are no gentleman, or something.
Oh, it's like Lloyd Benson saying to Dan Quayle, you, sir, are no Jack Kennedy.
Yeah.
All right.
I'm sorry, I don't have any more letters to read.
No, I wondered if did you have anything to say about the Governor Cuomo? I thought you did.
I think Cuomo's effort to do this is actually productive in a way, because he lives in Westchester. He sees the property taxes in Westchester and in Long Island amongst those wealthy communities, how this is really going to hurt those communities, hurt home prices.
You bet.
And hopefully, or not hopefully, but potentially have people end up moving to Florida. So I think Cuomo is very attuned to this and very nervous about blowing a hole in his budget with these high income earners that pay an enormous share of New York state income taxes.
Now that's substantively, and you're quite right about that, but it's also a political issue because, as Mike just mentioned, he's leading the way and he gets credit for having led the way on that.
Right.
Yeah, well, it is many regard the that aspect of the federal tax reform bill, which limits the amount of state and local taxes that can be deducted from your income taxes to $10,000, as a particularly aimed at blue states and wealthy states like California, New York, Massachusetts, and Maryland, et cetera. And it does feel that way. And this is somebody striking back and sort of assuming the leadership role nationally in that makes Cuomo look very good.
Mm-hmm. It certainly does.
And if it works, I think he deserves the credit.
Oh, if it works, it's huge for him. It's absolutely huge if it ends up working, which it could. Who knows?
It could, yeah.
Let's talk about Laura Ingraham. So
do we have to? No, I'm just kidding.
Fox News standing by Laura Ingraham, railing against intimidation efforts of advertiser pullout. So what happened here is Laura Ingraham, who is a Fox News personality, has been on radio, a very conservative pundit, if you will, has written several books on conservative stuff.
Things.
I don't know.
you haven't had her on yet, huh?
you know the story about Laura Ingraham? So she came, she was supposed to do the show. She was in town, and she came in, and we had her live at, I think, 11 o'clock. And she came in, and her car was here, and it was out front. And she was on the phone, and we went out, and we knocked, and we said, you're on. And she said, oh, I have to take this call. And we said, okay, but we're off at 11:30, so when you're done, we're done. And so about, 11:50, she gets out of the car and says, oh, well, where am I? And I said, well, the show's over. I'm sorry. I don't know what you want us to do, but, the show is over. Yeah. So anyway, she went after David Hogg, who is one of the young men who was present at the Parkland shooting. He was tweeting and saying about his colleges that had not accepted him. And she tweeted out and said some derogatory things as to
the kid.
How that happened. Then he said, oh, okay, well, hey, people, here are the advertisers for the Laura Ingraham show. Those folks who were following David Hogg went out and said, hello, advertisers, including Hulu and other big companies, and said, hey, pull your advertising. And they did.
Right.
So up until last week, she had little or no advertising on the show except for, like, pillow ads and that kind of stuff. And then she goes on a vacation, which planned or unplanned, depending on how you look
what
at
O'Reilly
it.
What O'Reilly did.
So right. then I think exactly what you just said, JP, the narrative started to form that this is exactly what happened to O'Reilly, Laura Ingraham probably not coming back. So Fox stepped out yesterday and said, no. We're standing by Laura Ingraham. They can drive advertisers away, but this is an agenda-driven intimidation effort, and the network is showing support for its embattled host. We cannot and will not allow voices to be censored, according to Jack Abernathy, Fox News' co-president, in a statement Monday. We look forward to having Laura Ingraham back hosting her program next Monday when she returns from spring vacation with her children.
Do you smell the hand of Rupert Murdoch here? Yeah.
Well, but the thing is this. The outrage of the right around boycotts like this is so duplicitous because they do this all the time. The million moms, when they don't like something on television, when they don't like a celebrity doing something, they'll call for a boycott of whatever the celebrity endorses and blah 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 blah, with the hopes of undermining them. And so now them saying, oh, this is not the right way to do things, boycott, pulling advertising is an abridgment of freedom of speech, it's just duplicitous.
Well, but do you think I think that the station manager or the head of the Fox Network, whatever his title is, coming out and supporting...
Co-president.
President of the Fox Network, coming out and supporting his talent, his shows, and his people who have said politically charged statements, and standing up for the right to say it, is admirable. It's not the same thing as O'Reilly, where O'Reilly had been exposed as being essentially a predator on several different women, and the company paid millions of dollars to shut the women up, and all of that was exposed. That was a very different situation. I don't agree with what Laura Ingraham said. I think it was a bullying thing to say, that the kid was whining because he couldn't get accepted in some colleges, and you don't go after a 17-year-old kid, especially one in the Stoneman High School, who was one of the survivors of that awful, awful experience there back in February, where 17 people were killed. But Be that as it may, that was a political statement, a stupid political statement, frankly. But standing up for their people on the air, I don't think is so bad.
No, but I also...
I'm sorry, but she has said so many horrible things that I don't know if this is the one that gets you fired.
Yeah,
that was sort of my feeling about it. Right. Like, she has just been so horrid in some of the things that she said about other issues. And I looked at this one, and I was like, okay, but, like, are we going to fire somebody because they said somebody was whining?
Well, okay, but wait. Do you think that the... Now, let's remember that it was the boy who stood up and said, take her advertising.
Well, that I love.
Wasn't that right?
I mean, he has a right to do that also, and the advertisers have a right to pull out. But
Johnson
and
Johnson, Nestle, Hulu, Jenny Craig, Ruby Tuesdays, Miracle-Ear, all
Miracle-Ear.
Miracle-Ear.
Wow.
If you've lost
the
Miracle-Ear,
pillow ads are going next.
No. He'll stick with her because his politics are just as bad as hers.
Well, but
I think she's in deep trouble. If Fox News doesn't have advertising on this primetime slot where they're supposed to be making tens of hundreds of millions of dollars a year and they have no advertising, they may say, okay, Laura, we're going to support you for a week or a month. But if those advertisers don't come back, they're going to fire her and
replace
her.
Well, that's the question. How soon do they come back?
Well, you're probably right, JP. On the other hand, did you ever hear the Koch brothers and some of these other guys? Who knows? You know, the shadow knows. But
Laura Ingraham, brought to you by Koch Industries.
Well, who knows?
If that happens, she'll be fine. But if the advertisers don't come back, she's in deep trouble. And if you're Laura Ingraham or you're any one of these high-profile people, why don't you have staffers manage your Twitter accounts? Why are you, Laura Ingraham, firing off a
tweet?
I'll
tell you why. Because she's been getting away with it all this time.
It's just like Trump. And it's been her stock and trade.
And
right.
She doesn't think that she's ever going to be held accountable. And that's the kind of arrogance. And arrogance is the word that gets so many of these people into trouble.
I couldn't believe that the this kid particularly seems to be a lightning rod.
Yes.
David Hogg, and he went on a podcast and he was swearing. He was saying that, you know, these old people don't know an effing thing about this, and the right went nuts on him and said, you know, this kid should have his mouth washed out with soap. And I'm thinking to myself, okay. So he's too young to swear, but he is old enough to have a gun. Is that what we're saying?
Yeah, right. Yeah. I mean, there were posts on Facebook and other social media putting, you know, the Target thing over him.
Yeah.
You
no,
know?
It's been
and Ted Nugent, you know, says they're all soulless. Yeah. You know, and he's a great arbiter of humanity.
It's a very emotionally charged time. I mean, I think that the Fox president has drawn a line in the sand, and they're going to be stuck with him. If they pull the rug out from under Laura Ingraham in the next several months, it's going to look really bad for them, and it's going to hurt the network. They're going to have to back her.
Were the ratings on that show? I haven't looked this up. Were they respectable?
She's good. You're pretty bulletproof in that slot on Fox News, which is the the most
prime
popular
time.
Right.
Network, but I think this kid that witnessed 17 of his friends getting massacred, he's bulletproof. I wouldn't say anything bad about the guy if I was the right. Why would you ever say that?
Because they're scared to death of him. That's
right. Right. And the girl, I mean,
the advertisers are.
Yeah, they all. And Ingraham. Look, you know, we were talking before. She made her creds by outing people in the Dartmouth newspaper when she was there. You know, she thought it was okay to go to a meeting and then a gay organizational meeting.
This was in the '80s.
Right in the '80s, and then publishing everybody's name.
Yeah, well, you got to look at the other side. If they get rid of who are they going to get? Maybe they'll get Ann Coulter.
Ann Coulter is like mad at Trump now. So,
I think Hope Hicks would be good in that slot.
What is Ann Coulter?
She'd be awesome.
She doesn't like Trump.
Yeah, Ann Coulter is on a tour going around saying she's disappointed in Trump right and left. And a lot of people think that's the reason over the weekend Trump came down so hard on immigrants. And she's been railing. She had supported Trump. Ann Coulter had. You know, she's that sort of really, really right-wing political harpy, as some call her. But she is out on a tour criticizing Trump, and it's beginning to take some effect.
All right, we're out of time. My thanks to everybody, Alan and Mike and JP and Libby. Thank you all very much. We'll be back right after this.